This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon, this is Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. Human survival is dependent on biodiversity, but it's our activities, supposedly in the name of our survival, that is causing biodiversity loss. And now with most humans living in cities, there is also an urgent need to understand how cities impact biodiversity and how urban biodiversity impacts people. So Kota Hijau Kita is a new integrated platform that was created to support and strengthen a growing movement of people participating in protecting natural areas and creating refuges for biodiversity, and that also includes in urban settings. And I'm going to find out more about this initiative from Wong Yi Lin, who is the president of the Kota Damansara Community Forest Society, Dylan Ong, who is the vice president of the Kota Damansara Community Forest Society, and Xiaolin Lau, who is the co-founder of Eat Shoots Roots, and they're all together part of Kota Hijau Kita. Welcome everyone, how are you today?
Good afternoon.
Thanks. But thank you.
Thank you so much for joining me. So yes, we're still in the MCO, so everybody is joining us virtually. I hope you guys are keeping safe and keeping well. But let's get straight to it. Yeah. So I understand that Kota Hijau Kita was initially established by the Kota Damansara Community Forest Society, of course, right? Which the both of you are part of, Dylan and Elin. But now it belongs to everyone. But before we get into that, can you remind our listeners about your society, you know, and also the Kota Damansara Community Forest Reserve, which I believe was gazetted back in 2010.
Yes, Kota Damansara Community Forest Society was gazetted on the 18th of February 2010 after a lot of pressure from local communities, nature lovers, environmental organizations, including the Malaysian Nature Society back then. So it was finally gazetted. And from then on, there's been an arrangement which is not codified between the Kota Damansara Community Forest Society and the Selangor Forestry Department to sort of co-manage the forest, in that we also assist in issues such as safety and security, looking for missing hikers, management of the forest areas. We conduct things like cleanups. We assist with other enforcement issues, although we don't have enforcement powers, but we advise local communities, people who come to feed the wildlife and conduct hash runs, etc. So we play quite an important role in the community, and this is because our role is so significant. There's been a lot of interest from other local community-based organizations, hiking groups, residence associations, which are interested in also playing a bigger role and having more engagement with the forestry department and the local councils and authorities in relation to green lungs and forests that have not been gazetted yet in their area. So because of that, we've managed to secure a grant from UNDP, Global Environment Fund, SGP, which is the small grants project, to carry out a project for close to 2 years called Building Collective Capacity for Biodiversity Conservation and Community Engagement among community-based organizations and government authorities in Greater Kuala Lumpur, which is the Klang Valley.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's wonderful. And I think the lovely thing is that it's all members of the community who are part of this society, isn't it? Everyone has kind of come together to I guess, you know, the initial plan was to get the place gazetted, to get the forest gazetted. And once that was done, now it's about managing and keeping it safe for everyone who's using it, right?
Yes, and also mentoring other organizations. It's not enough that we manage to get our own forest reserve gazetted. It's also important that we assist other groups who may lack the advocacy skills, because many of them don't come from a legal or conservation background. Generally, local residents and hikers and cyclists who want to have a more positive relationship with the authorities and who want to be able to have a say about the green lungs and non-gazetted forest patches in the remnant forests in their area.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And tell me a little bit about the folks behind the Kota Damansara Community Forest Society. So you're, of course, the president, Elin. Dylan, you're the vice president. Tell me a little bit about the group.
Yes. Like what Elin said, Juliet, the society was born after the forest was saved. Basically, that it was part of the Sungai Buloh Forest Reserve, which is actually historical, is the first forest reserve in the country.
Yeah.
It was gazetted back in the late 1800s. And it whittled away until there was about 300 plus hectares left, and that was also going to go. Mm-hmm. So, like Eileen said, you know, civil society came together and formed a very powerful movement that was able to save the forest, to change the Selangor state government's mind. And after that, it was decided, I wasn't around at that time, but it was decided that, you know, we should follow up to help the forestry department actually manage the place. Mm. I think the technical term for that is co-management. And I just like to point out that it's all done unofficially. Even the name Kota Damansara Community Forest is unofficial. It's not the, there's no legal term. It's not a legal term. It's not an official term. The official term for the forest is Taman Iko Rimba Kota Damansara.
Kota Damansara, yeah.
So one of the, I guess one of the things that we would like to see moving forward is for community participation to be sort of officialized, legalized. That term community forest to be something that is real, right, not something that just what the community says. And I think Kota Hijau Kita would be in part a platform to move towards that as well.
Okay. All right. We're going to find out more about Kota Hijau Kita after this. But quickly, let's talk to Charlene. Charlene, you're no stranger to the show. Nice to have you back. You are, of course, one of the co-founders of Each Shoots and Roots. Just remind our listeners about the work that you do.
Yeah. So, I mean, Each Shoots and Roots, for us, we've been around for 9 years now. And all this while, what we wanted to do is to empower people with the skills and tools to set up edible gardens in their backyards. And actually, the main intention for that is to reconnect people, mainly urbanites, with nature via edible gardening. Mm-hmm. So there's a role in Kota Hijau Kita, which we play, which we try to bring together the edible garden groups of all sorts, different communities, and so try to find out what are the challenges that they face, and bring the communities together and basically establish better roles for edible gardens within the city space and Greater KL as well.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure you're seeing a lot more of interest in edible gardening and people getting more in touch with nature, I suppose, and with growing their own food, especially during this pandemic. Am I correct in saying that?
Yeah, so there's been a really large surge since the first MCO. Like, suddenly everyone went into a panic and wanted to get their hands gardening when they had to stay at home. Yep. So it's been a good thing in a way that people have naturally gravitated towards growing something at home. And it's very good to see a lot of people interested, and suddenly everyone's well-versed in composting and well-versed in growing. So it's really good to see after so long of pushing this agenda.
Okay. All right. So, I mean, all of you are doing different works with biodiversity, with, you know, just kind of getting back to nature. But now let's talk about Kota Hijau Kita. How did it all come together? I did say that it was the Kota Damansara Community Forest Society who initially initiated it. But, you know, tell me how it came to be and how you've gotten everyone together.
All right. So under the UNDP project, part of our activities included community engagement and capacity building. So, and we wanted to create a separate platform, not just, we didn't want to just use the Kota Damansara Community Forest Society Facebook page for it, because we use that for announcements related to the community forest, like closures and reopenings, and of course the SOPs following reopening, etc. And we didn't want all those announcements to get drowned out. Mm. So the platform was created to bring together community-based organizations from all over Klang Valley, including a number of other organizations from the rest of Malaysia, so for them to share information on biodiversity. For example, we have a group called Urban Biodiversity Initiative. So they share a lot of information on flora and fauna, and including indigenous plants and their benefits. And then we have other groups talking about issues such as wildlife. And we also share links from scientific journals and nature journals from around the world, which we feel will be beneficial and helpful to our members. So it's a group that brings together, it's a platform that brings together different conservation groups, also edible gardening and urban gardening groups, and to share information and also to organize future activities and events.
Okay. Dylan, anything you wanted to add to that?
Yeah. If you look around, I mean, in Kuala Lumpur, there are many, many organizations doing different things, mm-hmm. Great work and stuff like that. but they are also doing things in silo. So the idea of the platform is to try to bring everyone together, to have a common voice, exchange ideas and stuff like that, you know, all of society thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's, in a sense, it's nothing new. In the Klang Valley, every remnant from a forest perspective, every remnant patch of forest, there is a community that is looking after it, unofficially or officially, probably unofficially. And it's the same in any town throughout Malaysia. At the back of a town, there's a forest or a hill, there's some community that goes up there every week and takes care of the place.
Yeah.
So the whole idea of the Kota Hijau platform is to start with KL and give sort of those communities, you know, get them together, you know.
Mm. I think maybe what you're trying to say is also strength in numbers, right? Because sometimes you can feel so alone in this, like, okay, some, let's just say, hypothetically, some developers coming to develop this beautiful hill that you've been using for, you know, the whole community has been using, and you don't actually know how to go about addressing that issue, right? And so you kind of tap on the knowledge of folks like yourselves who have been through these processes before, who know exactly, you know, the legal implications, you know, talking to the media, talking to everybody, and making that a good sort of fight, I suppose, to protect these particular areas.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. You'd be surprised. There's a lot of expertise within the communities themselves. Mm. Although everyone does things for free.
Yeah.
But they're you know, professionals in various fields, which, you know, an exchange of, you know, one helping another would, of course, strengthen that. The other angle would be to use it to engage with other professionals, town planners, local authorities, and so forth.
Okay. All right. I'm speaking today to Wong E. Lin, who is the president of the Kota Damansara Community Forest Society, Dylan Ong, who is the vice president of the Kota Damansara Community Forest Society, and Shaolin Lau, who is the co-founder of Eats, Shoots and Roots. And together, they are part of a new integrated platform that's called Kota Hijau Kita. And after this quick break, we're going to come back and talk a little bit about why urban biodiversity is such a crucial thing and why we really need to pay more attention to it. So stay tuned to Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. This is Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture. I'm Juliet Jacobs, and joining me on the line today are Wong E. Lin, Dylan Ong, and Shaolin Lau. E. Lin and Dylan are part of the Kota Damansara Community Forest Society. Shaolin is part of Eats, Shoots and Roots. And together, they are all part of a new integrated platform, which is called Kota Hijau Kita, which was, I guess, made to sort of strengthen a growing movement of people who are participating in protecting natural areas and creating refuges for biodiversity. So before the break, guys, we were talking about how Kota Hijau Kita came about. You know, it was International Day of Conservation of Biodiversity just last week, right? And let's talk a little bit about urban biodiversity. I mean, as I mentioned earlier, we know that, you know, humans have caused it an urgent global problem through our activities, and that, of course, is biodiversity loss. And as urbanites, right, green spaces are really critical habitats to support biodiversity. What are your thoughts on that, especially through the work that you guys have been doing?
Okay, so Malaysia has a national policy on biodiversity, and it actually, in writing, it has a strong emphasis on public participation for safeguarding biodiversity, but this does not always translate into action.
Mm.
Part of it is because lack of expertise among members of local community-based organizations, many of which may be entirely volunteer-run. There are a lot of encouraging signs that people are interested in safeguarding biodiversity, protecting native flora and fauna. People are more concerned about environmental issues. The Malaysian public increasingly sees environmental protection as something that is critical to to the survival of humanity. It's not just something that is nice to have once you've sorted out livelihood and bread and butter issues.
Yeah.
So this platform will create a focus so that different groups, community-based organizations, and the local community can engage with key government agencies, and also we enlist the support of planning professionals, legal professionals, even landowners and developers to explore where forests can be retained and gazetted. So what we do on this platform also is that we create awareness of biodiversity. For example, we explain the benefits of biologically diverse forests over say, monoculture plantations and landscape parks. And we also raise awareness on the flora and fauna we have in Malaysia, their roles in the ecosystem, their benefits to local communities, including to the indigenous communities. For example, under this platform, Urban Biodiversity Initiative actually has set up CMIS, the Center for Malaysian Indigenous Studies. They've actually set up an indigenous garden with pollinator plants and native plants. So this creates an opportunity for members of other community-based organizations to come and learn. So, for example, we want them to replicate pollinator gardens and native and indigenous plant gardens in their green spaces and green lungs in their own communities. So this is where the platform is of help. So instead of reinventing the wheel and having to do their research all over again, they can learn from the platform. They can seek the advice and support of other volunteers and leaders of groups.
That's wonderful. And I guess, you know, as cities sort of move towards more green practices, right, you know, having those experts who know things like species traits, for example, they can, I guess, help planners choose which plants, which animals, birds, insects that need support as well, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that's a very important point, especially in the urban environment where the landscaping is sometimes, you know, the focus is on non-native species, sometimes even invasive species, which is a big problem. And people, you know, invasive species in terms of people releasing their pets into waterways, tilapias taking over rivers, you know, people planting invasive plants next to the forest without realizing it is invasive and it is impactful on biodiversity.
The cascading effects that it could have, right, on the biodiversity, the local biodiversity there.
Yeah, awareness is
it's a huge issue. And do you think city dwellers living in cities think enough about biodiversity? You know, we're so caught up in our own little urban jungles, right? Do we even think about it? Is that something that you also are hoping to tackle through Kota Hijau Kita?
Yes, because unfortunately, a lot of people think that any kind of flora and fauna would be good for the environment. So they plant invasive species, they feed wildlife, they release non-native birds and fishes into the ecosystem. So this platform would create awareness and help educate community-based organizations so they can go and educate the members of their local communities.
Yeah, I think in the urban context, the not in my backyard way of thinking is very important because the backyards or forests is actually very small and shrinking. But in the urban context, the amenity values of forest patches are actually very high, recreational values, you know. During the MCO, when malls close, you don't see many people complaining. Mm. But when forests are closed, well, all hell breaks loose. People need to go up and run and cycle and walk through the forest. It's a very important part of urban life.
Mm-hmm. And those spaces are shrinking, isn't it? And that's why we need
spaces are shrinking.
We need to preserve. And Charlene, sorry, did you want to add anything to that, Charlene?
I was just going to say that usually urbanites don't really think about biodiversity in that sense. And with general awareness, even from the gardening perspective, I think if they start with one or two plants, eventually they will be exposed and be made more aware about the differences and the different kinds of species that they can introduce. And they will also find that planting a wider, diverse range of different plant species will actually help their garden or help their environment overall. So I think that's a very good inroad for them to learn about biodiversity. Mm-hmm. The idea of starting something and having this resource to at least help them figure out what to plant in their backyards and stuff like that. Yeah,
because I mean, these urban environments, actually, they are major areas of ecological change, right? They've gone through that already, but they're also, they still also have a lot of substantial native, but also non-native biodiversity, right? So I guess this is something that we all can work together, sort of looking, you know, with all the groups working together, they can all use their own different case studies and come up with like a really cohesive and a very good plan as such, right? Okay.
Just in agreement.
So I guess, you know, the million-dollar question, how can we actually help urban ecosystems thrive? I mean, what is some, you know, practical things that everybody can do to get that going and to, yeah, to make it work. I mean, it's for our own health, it's for our own benefit, but like we said, not many people think about it. Why should they start thinking about it, and how can they go about doing it?
It's safe in a community where there's remnant forest patches or any kind of green lung. Try to work with your local council or forestry department to get it gazetted or have some form of protection. Get the other members of the local community involved. There's not much point in you setting up an urban farm on a grass verge if there's no one else willing to speak up and assist you and to protect it from destruction or development. Also volunteer with your local environmental organizations and community organizations, because they need the strength in numbers. They need more people to be volunteers and stewards, not just users. Malaysians, unfortunately, are very good users. Once a recreational space opens, everyone's very happy to hike and cycle, but not enough people say, okay, I'll come and help you guys protect it. I'll come and help you plant a native tree corridor and stop soil erosion by planting ground cover, clean up the lakes, clean up the trails. Too few people offer to do that, although the numbers are growing thanks to social media. And we'd also encourage everyone to set up their own biodiversity gardens at home. Even if you have a balcony garden or windowsill garden, you can plant a lot of native plants that are beneficial to local insects and especially pollinators.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I would add to that, I mean, from the other way around, hopefully the local governments, the people in charge of forests would start to see communities as partners and consult and engage with communities when planning and developing and that kind of thing. Because it's a very powerful thing, and it takes a lot of responsibility off their hands, and it can only result in a positive outcome, I think. It has many times, but it's still not enshrined.
Yeah.
So we need, I think, through the platform, we hope to engage, but we also hope that the government will engage us. It's like Eileen mentioned earlier, in the national policy on biodiversity, that is actually one of the main targets, to build the capacity of local communities to help manage biodiversity.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not on the ground, it's not really happening. Yeah. Although it's a national policy, at a state, local level, it needs to be actually worked out, operationalized.
Yeah, because, you know, it doesn't have to be a large sort of space, urban green space that we need for biodiversity conservation, isn't it? I mean, a lot can be done with the small spaces that are still left. But of course, the important thing is to protect those small spaces that we still have left. And like you said, to get all the stakeholders involved in its protection, of course.
Yeah. I mean, just for example, in urban planning, so you have a patch of forest, a remnant patch of forest, beautiful forest with a lake in front of it, and a river flowing through it and stuff like that. So it should be, say, in the local plan, it should be seen as an asset, and you build around it. You know, what do you need to complement that forest? You know, you need either public transport or adequate car parks, facilities, you know, to put cafes in front of it, beautiful, you know, $1 million view and stuff like that. Well, unfortunately, it's not being done. Fronting the forest is usually the back of shop houses. There's not enough car parks, no toilets, everything. The forest is just ignored. I guess in view of, are we going to develop it in the future? It's not going to be there. So so that sort of approach in development slowly needs to change. But it's difficult because it's been around for many, many years. You know, forests, even rivers, there's no such thing as riverfront development in most places.
Mm.
It's always river at the back, where, you know, the heavy industry, the auto workshops are, that's where the rivers are, and become places, dumping grounds and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So if you could turn it around, you know, have forest front development, riverfront development, then we'll see, I think, you know, a good change in the way that people view forests and rivers and natural spaces.
Yep, definitely. And, you know, just looking at Kota Hijau Kita, you know, if anyone's listening and maybe they've got some, they're also part of a small community and they would like to join, you know, how can they do that? And how do you hope to actually engage with all the other different stakeholders together? How are those processes going to be carried out?
Okay, so, I mean, there are a couple of platforms going on at the moment. So kotahijaukita.my is the website for all the references and the resources that we'll be putting online. And also we'll be listing different community-based organizations on the website as well, so that you can see like a map overview of where everyone is. So everyone can see like, oh, you know, these guys are actually in my area, and then I can go help them out.
Sure.
Or we can maybe establish a conversation. So the website is one. The second thing is also then the Facebook group. So please join the Facebook group to connect with other people within the communities as well. That's quite active. And then, of course, like us on Instagram so you can find out more about different things that we're posting. So there's these three angles that we're tackling. That will hope to bring all the different parties together. And if you can like them and follow them and join us on the conversation, that'll be the best thing to do at the moment.
Okay, excellent. And even if you're not part of any organization as such, I mean, you're more than welcome to join, am I correct?
Yeah, for sure. So the Facebook group open to anyone as long as you have a Facebook account. And for the website, if you're not listed at the moment, just submit your details and we will list it. So it's really open, and the whole point is to get everyone involved, and it's an open platform. No holds barred. Yeah.
Okay, excellent. And what are some plans in the pipeline? I guess, you know, once you've got everybody together, what are some sort of things that you are there any plans that you're working towards as such?
Yeah, I mean, so far for this year, because there have been a lot of disruptions because of MCO, et cetera, but we've still been going on with a couple of activities. Mainly one, we've been organizing social media workshops to try to help existing community-based organizations get their social media running or assist them where possible. So we did one on Facebook, another one Instagram, and actually we did one last week on creating social media, how to get more people involved in your own community-based organization. That's one. And I think other activities that we'll be doing is bringing the edible garden communities together through probably an online workshop to try to suss out what everyone's challenges are and collect all the information and then have a report. And hopefully we can use this report to lobby for certain things, let's say within the community, if they have needs for their spaces to be gazetted for edible gardening, perhaps that could be something else. So that workshop is happening in 2 weeks. So if you follow the Facebook group, we'll post more details about it. But we are really hoping to get the other edible gardening groups involved. But that's the edible gardening side of things. And there's still a lot of other things happening from the trail building side of things. And maybe that one, Dylan, can speak more about it.
Sure, yeah, go ahead,
we have budgets under the grant for a number of different things. So one of them is trail building. So we still have a budget to build a new forest trail. And we're working on developing that. We also, you know, because of the MCO, everything's online. So yeah, we've run a couple of workshops on capacity building in terms of, well, I think, I remember one was on town planning and protected areas. And there will be a few more of these kind of things in the pipeline. Unofficially as well, there's a lot of exchange between the groups already.
Nice.
You know, work is always ongoing, threats are always there. So unofficially, that, you know, interchange already happening.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Ilin, anything you wanted to add to that?
And we also have a series of online talks and webinars planned on bringing biodiversity back. So different experts in fields such as butterflies and moths and small mammals and plants, they will present online workshops or talks on different flora and fauna. And actually, a lot of our physical in-person activities have been postponed because of the MCO, but once it's lifted, we hope to be able to conduct walks such as training local community-based organization leaders to be nature guides. We don't want people to just be running through a forest. We want people to be nature guides and to teach other visitors how to appreciate the local flora and fauna and see how they interact with other species in a particular ecosystem. So we will be announcing these activities on our platform and our social media pages. So we highly encourage people to request to join our group on Facebook so they can be kept updated on upcoming activities.
Okay, excellent. Thank you so much, everybody, for joining me today. And it sounds like a wonderful initiative and so much potential for growth and so much potential for everyone to join. I think even like residents associations, everybody, right, can just join and find out how they can contribute, how they can learn. So much knowledge exchange is going to happen. So again, if you are interested to find out more, just head to kotahijaukita.my or follow them on social media. I know there's a Facebook page, Instagram as well, did you say, Xiaolin?
Yeah, Instagram and a Facebook group, which is the more communal one, where everyone can talk to each other.
Okay, all right. So just request for access there. And yes, again, just head to the website if you'd like to find out more. So thank you so much, all of you, for joining me today. I've been speaking to Wong Yi Lin, who is the president of the Kota Damansara Community Forest Society, Dylan Ong, who is the vice president of the Kota Damansara Community Forest Society, and Xiaolin Lau, who is the co-founder of Eats, Shoots and Roots. And they were telling us more about Kota Hijau Kita, which is a new integrated platform to support and strengthen a growing movement of people participating in protecting natural areas and creating refuges for biodiversity. And if you miss any part of today's interview or any previous Earth Matters interviews, do search for the podcast on the BFM app or at bfm.my/earth. This has been Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.